Once upon a time, there were four little rabbits.
How old are you, Johnny? She asked.
16.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
A wise old king once said, "Of the making of books, there is no end." How true today. Of the overabundance of writing published each year, what's worth reading? The answer is simple. Read only the best. Come join the discussion on Just the Best Literature.
Hello again, everyone. Thanks for listening in today. I just want to start out with a quote again. We are discussing Ben Franklin's autobiography, and hopefully by now you have finished both parts one and two, and we probably will talk about part three a little bit later as it applies to his son William. And William was the royal governor of New Jersey, and he actually got into quite a bit of political and legal trouble later in his life, and Ben was trying to prevent that. But obviously William didn't listen to his father the way he probably should have. But here's a quote from the autobiography, just to bring us up to speed to where we were last time. And this is on page 9, if you have the Dover edition, or on page 18, if you're using the Norton edition. And Ben is talking about his early childhood education and about one of his, fondest hobbies when he was just a young boy of 12. And he was really into books and reading. We brought this up the last time, in the last program we had. But here's this quote. It says, "This bookish inclination at length determined my father to make me a printer, though he had already one son," meaning my brother James, "of that profession. In 1717, my brother James returned from England with a press and letters to set up his business in Boston. I liked it much better than that of my father." In other words, he liked the printing business more than he liked the candle business. He says, "but still had a hankering for the sea." And so this is at age 12. He's talking about he still wanted to go out to sea. And, of course, Ben's father, Josiah, did not want that to happen. And so what we want to do today, listeners, is we want to get back into our panel discussion of Ben's early childhood education. And again, with me today are Brandon Nice, and he is the assistant to the principal of Imperial Academy. He also teaches Shakespeare and English Lit to the high school in our Imperial Academy. And we also have James Brandon, and James has been on before several times. And, of course, both these gentlemen will be with us in the future as well. But James does teach both English literature and Shakespeare at the middle school and some at the high school level as well. And so let's get back to this, fellas. Last time we were talking about Ben and John Collins and how they liked to debate. And we also brought up the fact that Ben's father realized that Ben couldn't write worth very much at all, and he couldn't get his points across eloquently. And, of course, his friend John could. So let's talk a little bit about how Ben decided to remedy this problem. And, again, I just want everyone out there to remember, he's a 12-year-old. This is not even a teenager. And just listen carefully to what he did to educate himself to become the writer that he became. And remember, he produced Richard's Almanac for 25 years and sold 10,000 copies a year. And so this is a very good story. So I'll let whoever wants to get the mic first grab it, and you can start the story.
Okay, I'll take off with this. Remember, like Mr. Lieper said, is 12. And his dad says, "You need to improve your writing." And so then at about that time, this is right after that story about his dad finding the letters from between him and John Collins. And so he finds a copy of The Spectator, a volume, I guess. It's the third volume. And he reads it and he says, "This is good writing." And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to imitate it. And he didn't imitate it by just copying it out over and over again. He would write down kind of a brief summary of what it said, and then he would basically sentence by sentence, a word or two to remind him what his sentence was about, and then he would try to rewrite it from memory. And then he just did it again. Then he did it again. Just trying to get the rhythm and the sound of the words, and also just remember. I think one of the most important things he brings out here when he comes back and he compares the spectator to the original, he found out that his vocabulary was not large enough to actually express the ideas. And that's something that we cover quite a lot at Imperial, is just vocabulary. It's very important. And he says, I didn't have a stock of words or readiness in recollecting or using them, and, which I thought I should have acquired before that time if I had gone into making verses. So he's talking about there's an advantage to poetry is building up your stock of words, your vocabulary, because you have to know, okay, this word will work, but it's not the right length, and it doesn't have the right cadence, or it doesn't rhyme. And so you have to find another word, and that would have driven him to a dictionary and really improved his vocabulary. But just this drive to get better at writing and to impose what if myself or Mr. Brandon or Mr. Leap imposed to on our class, said, read this, I'm going to give you, you know, 8 words that each signify what each sentence is about, and then you have to recreate it from memory. That would be a hard, hard assignment, and he imposed it on himself, which is great.
Yeah, to me, it's just astounding. Of course, you know, I've been teaching for years. Brandon's been teaching. James has been teaching. And, you know, what we end up with most of the time is we do the analysis for the child. You know, you need to learn more vocabulary. Ben figured it out himself at 12. Now, I'm sure his dad was involved. As we said last time, Brandon brought that up very well last time, that he had such respect for his father. But here's a young boy at 12 realizing, hey, I don't have enough vocabulary. I know even for myself, I just was thinking about certain things, and I thought, you know, I don't have enough vocabulary, so I bought another course on building a vocabulary. And, you know, there's probably some people think I have too many words, you know. So, but it is, it's amazing at 12 that he had the power of self-analysis, that he could analyze it. And hopefully you picked up what Brandon is saying, is he took the Spectator. Now, the Spectator was a magazine. It was more like a political essay magazine. It's not like picking up People right. magazine, or it's not like picking up, you know, Time. And I don't want to be disparaging of Time, but it doesn't give you all the facts. It's a little bit like Facebook had to admit the last couple weeks, you know, that they hide conservative things. So we might as well just stir everything up while we can here, because it's true. I mean, they've hidden things. And Time doesn't report on everything. Now, Time does report on certain things that I think are interesting. But, you know, the Spectator, it was a weekly paper that did come from England. And there were two writers in there. One was, his last name was Addison, and another one was named Steele. And these were supposedly like the greatest essayists, you know, on the island. And people loved to get it. And here's a 12-year-old. Studying these great essayists, and essentially what Brandon was saying there is he would take the prose, and try and, you know, read it, understand it, you know, digest it. Then he would write it in his own words, and then on top of that he would convert it to poetry, and then back to prose, and then go from the prose back to poetry. And so anyway, we can get into I'd like these fellows to help me with this, because, you know, they have they've done a lot of teaching and a lot of effort on their own. But I'll just let you guys continue. So
a point that stands out to me, I think, just this incident, I think, is one of a series within his life. I think if you go back in time in his life, you see certain of these same qualities. If you move forward, you definitely see some of these same qualities. There's an amusing story that he even brings out in his biography that in our last panel, Brandon Nice mentioned, where he got in trouble because there was this spot where he and his friends would go fishing, you know, for minnows or whatever, and it got muddied up, and they didn't have a shore to stand on anymore. So Benjamin Franklin says, well, what's the solution? And he sees a giant pile of stones over, you know, nearby that somebody's going to use to build a house. And he's like, oh, well, we'll just take these. And they were not small stones. And he said it took like 2 or 3 boys to a stone to move them. But they moved them, and they built themselves a little wharf to fish from. And his father corrected him because obviously he stole somebody else's stones. But the thing that struck me about that,
house, yeah, that's
right. But the thing that struck me about that story is one, that he immediately saw a solution and just acted on it. But two, that the industry involved in that, that this was not a simple solution, and required coordination of effort between small boys, which if you've ever had any experience with small boys, can be difficult to get them all to work together on something in unity. But apparently he was able to get this done. But just that idea where...
done overnight.
Right, yeah. But they saw something and it was hard. It was difficult, but they did it because it accomplished an end that they wanted. And I think it's a similar character quality that he takes here in The Spectator where, I mean, even as an English teacher looking at his method here, you're like, wow, that's intensive. I mean, I've never done anything like that, to try and learn to be a better writer. Maybe I should. It probably would be helpful for anybody. But I think it's that same character quality, that same industry within his character. He sees the end that he wants to accomplish, and he sees a means to it, and it's perhaps a means that most people would shirk from. Like, this is hard. I don't want to do this. But he didn't even think about that. He doesn't even say, it doesn't indicate in this that at any point he thought, wow, this is very difficult. Didn't even enter. I think it's us looking at it now thinking, wow, that's hard. But he never describes it as hard. Yeah. This is just what he did.
It's probably after he was done, he probably thought, right. Well, I should have talked to my dad first.
Maybe there's a better way to do that.
Because I'm sure they made them take it down, too, yes. and return all the stones. But let's go into, okay, when did Ben do all this? When did he do all this work? This writing work. Remember now, he's an apprentice. He's got a job. He's got like a 9-year job he can't get out of. And I'm sure they worked, full 8-9 hour days. So I'll just set you guys up and say how he did it.
Oh yeah, his he did it at night. I mean, he loved it so much. He would we talked about maybe we didn't, but maybe it was just a conversation between but he borrowed books, and in order to get them back without them being missed, he stayed up all night and read it and returned it the next day. So he probably got off work, like you said, 6 o'clock, maybe later, went and borrowed a book, read it all night, returned it in the morning. That's how precious knowledge was to him. And I think what it leads into in all of what we're talking about here is what, from your first program, this is the number one bestseller in what department? The self-help, self-improvement. And that's, I mean, that American attitude, really, of here's where I was born, but I'm going to get better. I mean, Ben Franklin embodied that so much. I think you talked about that a few times. But, okay, I can't write, but I can get better, and I'm going to work at it. And he gets to the point, he's 16. He reads the book. This is right after, he reads a book about basically vegetarianism, does that, just picks up everything he can. He works out a lending system with one of the tradesmen in the town that had a large library. He starts reading really deep books. I mean, he's like 16, 15 years old. Picks up Cocker's book on arithmetic. He talks about navigation books, geometry, The Art of Thinking, not the one by Ernest Dimne, but earlier one. Locke on Human Understanding.
That one's difficult.
that is a meaty book. Xenophon's Memorable Things of Socrates. and he gets in here, and what he does is he just starts outstripping people so quickly, going, just passing people up. And I love this part because it just shows the intellectual vanity, but at the same time just the fire and the spark for life he had, where he would pick the wrong side of an argument and then just argue with anybody until he could wear them down because he just had a better system. But it wasn't necessarily part of wanting to convince them of their argument's wrongness, their stance. It was just a way of him exercising, of sharpening his skills for what later happened, probably well unbeknownst to him. But really, I mean, even just that was, I'm going to try and to improve myself, can I hold my own while arguing something maybe I don't even really agree with or that nobody else really agrees with? And that kind of gave him a more of a liberal mindset, even because he would study the other sides of these arguments. But just wanting to improve himself so strongly that, you know, everything in his life was just geared towards, I'm going to get better. I mean, even the food, I can do math better if I eat vegetarian. That's a pretty big thing. Not many of us would really want to sacrifice that.
It's really interesting is that he took the vegetarian diet so that he could have more time.
To save money as well.
And to save money to buy books. But he had more time because his brother, you know, he was trying to get money, more money to save to buy books. So his brother was paying for his boarding. So he convinced his brother, well, look, I'll be a vegetarian and I don't have to eat the food. You know, make me pay less. And you know, he'd eat like nuts.
A handful of crackers and some water.
Yeah, right. But he, what did he do at the time? He studied and he wrote. And, you know, who does that today? What 12-year-old is going to do that today? Now, it's also interesting if you look at what happened is his father took him out of grammar school, but then he put him in this George Brownell's school, where it seems like it was probably more like public school. And he was specialized in arithmetic and writing. Well, Ben could not learn arithmetic from the guy for whatever it was. Later he said that it was Brownell's problem. But then, like Brandon just said, so Ben bought books on geometry and he bought books on math and he taught himself. And as a printer, he would have needed to know math. And he had needed to know it well. And he began to excel at it. And so there really is, you know, quite a lot there that it's just so interesting. Now, again, Mr. Stephen Fleury is talking about Trumba Daily, about helping our children and parents. This is where we really need to work. And I can speak for grandparents as well, since I am a grandparent of 8 grandchildren, which is absolutely miraculous to me. But, you know, I do have a 12-year-old grandson, and I do work with him and encourage him to think and do more. And I actually, you know, his parents have worked really hard, and instead of buying him Legos, I buy him books. And now we're actually sharing books together. I bought him a set of books for boys. It's called The Great Brain, now we're sharing them together. I let him read them first, and he gives them back to me, and then I'll read it, and then we talk about it. So the family's having a great time with all that. So it's just one of those things that look what you can do if you're in the right environment. And Ben was in the right environment. And his brother, James, did let him do all this study because he was such a good printer. He was really learning the printing trade really well. And actually, I think when this all comes around to the end of it all, he was becoming much better than James, and essentially because of his education and, you know, all that. So I don't want to, you know, steal the whole mic here.
Well, I just think it's a good point that you brought out. Where was this coming from? We talked about this in our last panel. You said his environment. People aren't born with the innate ability to drive themselves and put in the kind of effort like we see from a young man here. He obviously learned that from his environment. He was looking to his father, and we talked about that relationship last time. That example drove him to become what he did. Obviously, you know, some of that's personal as well, and he would have built on the things that he learned. But at the beginning, I mean, you're learning character traits from the people around you, from the people influencing you. And who was influencing him? You know, his father was the one he talks about the most. I'm sure his mother was as well. But clearly his father had an influence on him. Even if they didn't see eye to eye on certain things, he had a real respect for him and the example that he set. And that, I think, you could attribute in his early life as one of the most important factors to who he became as an adult. Because I think all these things that we've been talking about are great qualities, but where did he develop that drive? Where did he develop that desire? Who allowed that to develop or promoted it? His family, his father.
Right. Right. Well, it's just amazing. Now, one thing I might want to clarify here is when Brandon was talking, I think he definitely alluded to it, is we are really talking about a period of about 4 years, from 12 to 16 to 17. When Ben did get into the vegetarian diet, he was already 16. And he even says that in the autobiography. He says, look, I was 16, I got into the vegetarian diet. So this didn't happen him becoming a writer just didn't happen overnight. It took years, you know, but he was willing to do it. But that's the time period when you should be doing it. You know, that's the time period when you should be getting most of your education. And Herbert W. Armstrong taught us, you know, the years 16 to 25 is when a child should be doing most of their education and preparing for their adult life. And, so many people, they wait till, well, when they get to college, then we'll worry about that. Well, no, you should be starting that when they're 12, and you should be working with them. Even Mr. Stephen Fleury, like I said, on the Trumpet Daily, and, you know, he's talked about this many times, that if you look at our IA program, we do expect a lot more out of our children than I think they have time to expect in the public school. We have to realize that we have small classes, and we just had our recital, our end of the year recital, last night. Now, when you hear this, the recital will have been over for weeks. Here's the point is here are these teachers from the Oklahoma City Orchestra are working with our children in flute, and they're working with them in guitar, and they're working with them in violin, and they came out to this recital, and it really does blow your socks off what we hear. But you have to understand that these children are put in these instruments at kindergarten, and they have music then every day while they're in school until they graduate. And so that's going to make a kid a great musician. And so, but it does take that work and that effort. And I know just in England recently, they had this, you know, walkout strike because the kids are getting tested too much, and the kids are getting too much of this and too much of that. You know, I think there was even a part where they have too much vocabulary to worry about, and they have too much punctuation to worry about. And yet Ben Franklin learned vocabulary and he learned punctuation, where he excelled at them, but he had to excel at them to be a great printer. And so,
I think the fire is what gets me about it. Is the drive. I've been a teenager, you know, and he just had this powerful drive just to accomplish and do and improve himself and go get it. And Mr. Armstrong talks about that, and that some of it was a little misguided and a little too over the top, but he also says, I would rather deal with that, or I would rather have had that than to be a dead fish or a limp-wristed, you know, floating down the river. And he said, I think that was what Ben is right now. In this space that we're going through, he is a little cocksure of himself. He's writing things and slipping them under the door and getting, you know, published, and he's getting pretty vain about himself. And he reflects that is indeed what happened. But, you know, pushing yourself at that age, like you said, 16, 25, you know, especially younger, because what we can see is that his dad actually helped rail some of that in, you know, where he didn't go crazy and he didn't say, everybody loves my poem, I'm going to become a poet, and then end up a beggar on the street, or, you know, just kind of another minstrel that, you know, plays for pennies or whatever. He actually, his dad guided him and kept him from going to the sea, kept him from doing a lot of things that, you know, a kid with capabilities like his could have easily done without that guidance. And then it took him to the levels, just long enough to take him to the levels where he actually got in the business where he should have been.
Yeah, I thought I'd bring up, since you brought that up, Brandon, I bring up this quote. This is in your Dover edition, it's page 10, and then in the Norton edition, it's page 19. And it talks about this poem that his brother had him write for the Courant. And the title of it was The Lighthouse Tragedy, and this is when a dad and I think a daughter and his wife all died. And the quote was, they sold the poem and it made some money. And they said, "This flattered my vanity, but my father discouraged me by ridiculing my performance and telling me verse makers were generally beggars. So I escaped being a poet, and most probably a very bad one." And so that just confirms what Brandon is saying. And guess what, fellas? We're out of time again. So thanks for being here today. And for all of you out there listening in, if you have any questions for me, remember you can submit them to me at jbl@pcog.org. You can also follow me on Twitter, and it's at jblliterature1. And so remember, the next book we'll be reading is Shakespeare's play Hamlet. But just to give you a heads up, next time we're going to have the 60-plus panel come in and talk about Ben Franklin's autobiography. So hopefully you can catch up and study into Ben Franklin's early childhood education. It's really kind of fascinating. And until next time, just keep reading.
You've been listening to Just the Best Literature on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.